Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. This is part of a series of guest appearances, kindly arranged by Paul of the YouTube channel Paulogia, in order to cover for me while I take some time off to recover from my recent loss. Many thanks go out to everyone involved. Please enjoy.
Kalam, or the Kalam cosmological argument, it's been done to death. The argument's been made, the counter-apologists have responded, and apologists like William Lane Craig have been banging away at this particular pulpit for a long, long time. Now, I'm not totally convinced that William Lane Craig is all that relevant to mainstream Christian culture. I'd never heard of the guy when I was a believer. I didn't hear of him until I became an atheist activist. And then, oh, look, there's William Lane Craig, but he wasn't relevant to my personal religious life. But he does seem to be the poster child for the Kalam cosmological argument. And I had a few thoughts, really a main thought, about the whole thing. The Dr. Craig Videos YouTube page has this catchy little clip, runs about 4 or 5 minutes. It's well produced, it's narrated by a polished voiceover actor with an admittedly intelligent-sounding script.
Does God exist? Or is the material universe all that is, or ever was, or ever will be?
If you don't bother to scratch the surface, this is the kind of empty calorie feast that religious people will gobble up and then spit back out to other people. Quick definition, if you're not familiar, Kalam stems back to the Arabic word for word, or argument, or speech, utterance, the cosmos spoken into existence. The argument is this: whatever begins to exist has a cause, a first cause. There's a prime mover, an other out there that exists beyond space and time, and this other began the whole thing. And it's on this claim that Dr. William Lane Craig and his fellow apologist walk up to the cliff, and then they jump into the abyss of total presumption. And that's the main point I want to come back to. But first, from the video.
Is the first premise true? Let's consider. Believing that something can pop into existence without a cause is more of a stretch than believing in magic.
As atheists and counter-apologists, you and I are used to being straw-manned by the religious. They build up a false claim, and then they knock it down and congratulate themselves for outsmarting us. And in this case, the Craig page is declaring that you and I believe that nothing actually caused the universe. At the beginning, we're stuck with this faulty premise. We're not saying, you and I are not saying that there wasn't a cause. We're saying we don't yet know what that cause might have been. Is it possible that the universe has always existed? I've watched the theoretical physicists and the cosmologists. They've had this discussion and this debate, but there's not an assumption that it's always existed, that the universe is eternal. Maybe, but that's not remotely the protest that we are making to Bible-believing Christians as they gleefully misrepresent us here. The more I've seen the evidence about an expanding universe that once started at a single point in a very small form that big banged its way outward, I'm hugely suspicious of an eternal universe, but who knows, right?
Did the universe begin, or has it always existed? Atheists have typically said that the universe has been here forever.
There's the claim again. Atheists insist on an eternal universe. Please show that to me in the counter-apologetics handbook, if you would.
And if something can come into being from nothing, then why don't we see this happening all the time?
We've got the standard something from nothing argument. This ties into what just came before. Takes us back to the human ignorance about the origins of all things, which isn't necessarily nothing. It's not the claim we're making. And then there's the impressive-sounding invocation of the second law of thermodynamics.
First, let's consider the second law of thermodynamics. It tells us the universe is slowly running out of usable energy. And that's the point. If the universe had been here forever, It would have run out of usable energy by now. The second law points us to a universe that has a definite beginning.
This is a common go-to among the apologists. It sure sounds impressive. And I hear the argument usually in two different contexts. First, there's the claim that the closed system of the Earth and our solar system could not support organized life because of entropy. In other words, as heat energy is dispersed out there, everything would become more chaotic, right? We wouldn't see organized life taking place. We wouldn't see organization within our system. It would be more and more chaotic in a closed system. The problem is we don't live in a closed system because we get plenty of heat energy from our sun. Then the second version of the second law goes like this. If the universe existed forever, and this is the claim that Craig is making about atheists, we're saying that the universe is automatically eternal, right? No beginning and no end. If the universe is eternal, the second law of thermodynamics would have caused this increasing entropy to just blow the universe out into an oblivion of energy chaos. We wouldn't see any organized systems anywhere. An eternal universe would have just simply become a wacky, chaotic mess. Somehow this is supposed to prove Jesus. But again, I am coming back to that. Here's a fun experiment to try. Ask the apologist about the other laws of thermodynamics. I mean, if they're going to expound on law two, hey, what about law zero and law one and law three? What do you think about those? Chances are you'll just be greeted with a blank stare. The laws of thermodynamics, not exactly light reading, but it's something that we should have a cursory understanding of if we're going to engage in these conversations about a first cause and the origins and nature of the universe. It's a big sandbox, but I think you and I can play at least around the periphery of it. Craig's video does the same thing that Kant Hovind does, the same thing that so many apologists do. It cites the scientists, and it will list them by name. You and I have never heard of them. It's possible they've been marginalized by the overall scientific community, or perhaps they're just some of those people who have outsmarted themselves, intelligent people who still hold to a Christian faith. A great example is somebody like Dr. Francis Collins. Now, this guy is not unintelligent. He does hold to a biblical belief, much of it in metaphor, because he is a proponent of evolutionary science. He says our genome has proven that Adam and Eve are not the origins of humankind. But he has that special little spot in his brain where religion lives. And this can be true with a great many scientists. There are a lot of people out there who have degrees in science who do hold a religious belief. And apologists like Dr. William Lane Craig are always scanning about to try to find these scientists and put them out on the poster. Kent Hovind actually has a series of scientists, but his statement of requirements for the Answers in Genesis organization is that you have to start with a Bible belief before you can accept any science, otherwise you are not welcome as a scientist who will represent the organization. This, of course, is not how science works. We don't start with the answer and then begin to experiment. The video, of course, invokes Albert Einstein. This is supposedly a credibility builder. But Einstein's on record. He declared outright he did not believe in a personal God. And don't believe the stories that Einstein accepted Jesus. At best, Albert Einstein was a deist. He believed there might be an impersonal God out there somewhere, you know, Spinoza's God. But he didn't believe in a personal God, certainly not the personal God of William Lane Craig. And this finally brings me to the point that I've been trying to make all along. On the Reasonable Faith website, which is the website of Dr. William Lane Craig, he lays it out as usual. Something cannot come from nothing. The universe began to exist. Something began or caused the universe. And then watch this. Watch what happens in his concluding statement. He ironically invokes the Muslim theologian and philosopher Al-Ghazali, who claimed that the uncaused first cause must be a personal being with a will and desire to conjure everything into existence. This is a huge leap over the cliff, but we are not finished yet. Next, Craig simply declares that the first cause must be God. His words, a beginningless, uncaused, timeless, spaceless, changeless, immaterial, enormously powerful creator of the universe. Now, beyond this huge laundry list of assumptions lies the fact that William Lane Craig has simply arbitrarily decided that the first cause God is his personal cherry-picked Christian God with a proper name. He doesn't make that connection in Kalam, right? His videos and lectures and web pages, they spend a long, long time making only a deistic claim. The faceless watchmaker is out there, and that watchmaker wound everything up and set the universe into motion, even if you allow that this first cause has a consciousness and a will and desire and intelligence and even a personality that exists beyond our space and time. His Kalam cosmological argument has nothing to do with Jesus, the personal God of William Lane Craig and so many of the Kalam apologists out there. William Lane Craig is working totally outside the Bible until he simply decides to jump off the cliff, and he makes the Christian Bible the net that he falls into. He simply decided it's true because it is, because he has faith, perhaps because of his hand-picked religious scientists who are eager to say that the Bible is a science and history book. And you and I already know how problematic that declaration is. So that's the main point I wanted to highlight here, something you might pay attention to in your own discussions if you're out there talking to an apologist, even an armchair apologist, somebody who doesn't have a PhD, but somebody who wants to defend the faith, and they dive into the Kalam cosmological argument to prove Yahweh or Jesus or Allah or whatever deity has a proper name and a face and a person, a personality, agency, etc. Watch how big a leap they have to take to get from bare bones deism into the assumption that the cause is not just a god, any god, some other god. It happens to be their arbitrary, hand-picked, isn't it convenient, personal god. Now, is that a leap of faith over facts? I will let you decide